Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Bring a little sunshine indoors with the exciting new arrivals in store or online at harrycurry.com.
0818 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon. You are very welcome to Liveline. Katie Hannan in for Joe today until 3 o'clock. And listening to the housing minister there talking to Cian, this is the latest stab the government is having at tweaking housing policy around the rental, private rental sector, telling us that today is about protecting renters, these latest moves. Eileen, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Katie.
Eileen, your situation, give us a sense. You're currently in a rented property.
Yes, I've been in this property for almost 11 years, 11 in August. And the landlord's been very fair. I had no problem with them. But I kind of thought I'd be able to continue for another number of years as long as I was working and would be able to pay the rent. But unfortunately, in March, he contacted me to say that he was going to be selling the property and that I was getting an eviction notice, which I did. I have to be out in early November.
Okay, so and to be, it's important to say that's entirely legal and it is his legal right to do that. And as you say, you have no issue with that, but it has left you in a very difficult situation. And again, you're still working, Eileen, but you're beyond the age a lot of people would have retired.
Yes, but I knew I'd have to keep paying rent, so I had two jobs up to Christmas, but I retired from one because I reckoned I couldn't keep going at the pace. So I've left myself with one. But now, because I'm facing a new rental market, I'm trying to expand within that work to try and get more work so I can earn a bit more.
Do you mind me asking what age you are, Eileen, or do you want
70,
to give
it? 70.
70. As you say, you were actually working two jobs up to Christmas to try and keep your head above water here.
Yeah.
And you live with your daughter, Eileen?
I do, yes.
And I know she would be dependent on you.
Yes, she's on disability.
Okay. So there's two of you. You've had this eviction order now for a number of months.
Yeah.
And I suppose I should say you're divorced yourself. This is how why you were single at this stage of your life in this situation as well.
Yes. For a good while, yes. Yeah.
What rent have you been paying, Eileen?
$14.77 now a month.
Okay. And would that be below the market rate in your area?
It would. Yeah, it was quite a shock when I should have really been keeping an eye on that, because I'd always thought that I'd be able to eke out till I was 75 and would have to stop work. But so it came as a shock, and then I began to look around, and most rents are above 2,000. The only ones that are below are ones I assume that are on the rent pressure zones.
Yeah.
And have come on the market for whatever reason. But naturally, people are staying where they can because they probably look out and see how expensive it is also and don't want to move.
So you have to find at the moment, if before you move and phasing into that, you're currently finding nearly €1,500 a month for your rent.
Yes, I'm currently paying that, yes.
That's a lot of money, Eileen.
Well, that is quite a lot of money, but it's not as much as I'll have to pay. I mean, at the moment when I go on Daft, I put max 2,000, even though that's kind of aspirational. But there's so few properties out there under 2,000. And then when you do apply to them, you get no response. So I applied to one, a two-bed in the local area, got no response, rang the real estate agent, and they were very nice, actually. They talked to me, though I don't think they normally do. And the girl said, well, you have to keep applying every day for the same one. Yeah. So the next one I applied to, I did that, but sure, I haven't heard anything back. I think there's just so many people looking for stuff that, you know, they don't even bother really if they choose one and that's it.
And you don't have to give me your salary or whatever, but I mean, how much of your salary is going, like what percentage of your salary would be going to cover the rent as it stands?
I'd say close to, well, I'd say 40 to 50%.
Right.
And that's not unusual. I've been renting for many years and I've always paid more than the, you know, the supposed amount people are meant to pay. And I'm sure I'm not the only one doing that.
Yeah, because I know that the affordable rate that people say, you know, you could expect to pay and manage would be 30% of your income. But
no,
you're way beyond
very
that.
Very few people are getting away with that really nowadays.
And, you know, as you got into your later 60s and as you say, you're now 70, Eileen, well, like, what, you were looking forward into the future. What were you thinking in terms of, like, you can't obviously go on working forever?
No. What was I thinking? But, I mean, you don't have much choice. If you're renting, I'm renting because I can't afford to buy. And obviously, most of my money is going on rent, so I've no way of saving up for and anyway, I'm too old to get a mortgage. So I was hoping that when I'd get to close to 75 and would have to give up, that I'd be able to apply for social housing then, because my income would be below the max required. I'd be way down then.
But I mean, I think you have to get on those lists. You want to be getting on them before you're 75. Eileen,
well,
I think those lists are...
You can't go on if you're earning above a certain amount, you see. And if I gave up my work, then I'd be homeless, because I know that the lists are so long, so there wouldn't be anywhere for me. Do you know what I mean? So I'm kind of caught in that trap now.
You see, I have thought about this, this time bomb really that we have going now, in that a lot of people were unable to buy, obviously, because of this, the way the housing market went over the last 20 years. Mm. And the idea of where are all these people who are currently managing to pay their rent? What are they going to do once they, you know, once they get to retirement age? It's a real issue that hasn't really been addressed as far as I can see.
Oh, yes. No, it isn't addressed. I mean, because understandably, they talk about young people and how they're, you know, struggling to pay rents, but they don't often mention older people like me. I think maybe there's this idea that everyone buys a house and therefore when they get to my age, they're not in that position. But that's not true. There are loads of people who don't own their own houses.
And a lot more, as you say, you know, marriage is breaking up and only, you know, one household surviving out of that relationship. And this is happening more and more and more now. And as you say, if you're a young person, how do you manage with these rents? I suppose you go into these, you know, big house shares. But
I know it's not much privacy, though, is it? Always having to share with someone maybe you don't even know.
Could you imagine doing that, Eileen?
Oh, not at this age. Gosh. Well, I might be forced to, but I hope not. Well, I mean, say I had to for a short period of time until I could get social housing. Well, I'd have to bite the bullet then, but yeah, not something I'd want really.
So you got the notice that this eviction was coming in March. And how long have you got, did you say again, until you have to be out?
Until early November.
So what are you going to do, Eileen?
Well, at the moment, I'm looking at cost rentals. Now, they're a lottery. So I've never been lucky in lotteries, but I keep applying for them anyway. So they're a bit cheaper. So you'd get one maybe between 15 and 1700 a month, because mm-hmm. They're meant to be 25% lower than the average rent. So that would be for a two-bed. So I keep applying for those and see if something comes of it.
Yeah, I know from the reporting from the last number of those that came out, there was a huge, huge number of people applied for them for the small
Absolutely.
Number that were available. So that's like that's kind of like the national
yeah.
lottery at this stage, I would say. Eileen, will you hang on with me? I've got Maria on the other line. She's been listening to you. Hi, Maria.
Hi, how you doing?
Yeah, I know you were listening to me chatting to Eileen there.
Yeah, I was. And I have to say to Eileen, I'm actually heartbroken for her. I feel like she's not alone in this situation, in her circumstances. I feel like it's a reality that so many individuals are facing. And I'm very, very heartbroken for her, considering she has a daughter who is on disability, who she is trying to look after as well. And what saddens me about the situation is our government waits until stats come in to then stand over the discussion, the topic, and then say they're going to have a plan and help the citizens of Ireland. And it all comes too late. It all comes at the detriment of Eileen's well-being, her daughter's well-being, what they'll have to go through with that trauma of having to find a home. And she's completely right. Like, rents are up in the 2,000 mark in so many areas in Ireland today. And I just feel like local resources are very different than how they used to be. And there needs to be a patriation of resources to help citizens like Eileen. She's worked her whole life. At 70 years old, I'm sitting here and I'm actually holding back the tears thinking about she was working two jobs up until Christmas. I find that very sad that we as a country are allowing this to happen to our citizens, and our government is, honestly, at this stage, you just feel it's deliberately turning a blind eye, because it doesn't seem to be the resources and the wherewithal to act in a proactive way, you know?
Okay. Well, look, I look. James Brown, the minister, isn't here to account for himself on this. I will just repeat what he was saying on the 1 o'clock news there, saying that this latest move, where the whole country has been put into the rent pressure zone, is actually about, you know, giving greater protection for renters. And I know there's other elements to this where, when people leave tenancies, that they will be able to reset them, landlords will be able to reset them to market rates. But they are saying that they're coming down heavily on the side of protecting renters here. That's what they're saying. But obviously that's no comfort whatsoever to Eileen today. Are you a renter yourself, Maria?
I was a renter for years, and I, through blood, sweat and tears, saved for a long time and bought last August. But I moved two counties away from everyone I know, in order to have a roof over my head, in order to have security and to not be at the mercy of, you know, the being a renter. Because my rent was going up and up and up. I have a couple of dogs. I wouldn't have been able to get a new accommodation that allowed dogs. Like, your whole, people's whole lives have to change in order to have a roof over their heads. I felt the deep worry of every time that yearly lease came up for renew, whether or not, you know, things were going to change, if they were going to add the 2%, which they did, you know. And what I find is such a contradiction, it's not a contradiction, but I find this is the bizarre part about it. People who are renting to renters, the more they get in rental income, the more they pay in tax. And I don't think that that's very profitable, even for the landlords out there. So I feel like we're in this washing machine cycle, and it's to the detriment of individuals like Eileen at her age. I'm in my 40s.
You know, Maria, it's a very good point that actually we don't talk about, is that this massive hike in rents that we've witnessed over the last 10 years must have led to a massive windfall in taxes for the government, because it's as we know, it's 50%. We hear landlords complaining about it all the time, and we don't actually hear about that bonanza and what's being done.
No one's focused on it. No one's focused on it. I know people personally that have rented out their properties, and they have a tax bill every October that they're paying out of pocket. It's not from profit that they've made on the property, and the reason why they're doing that is because their mindset is, okay, you know, I'm going to keep it as a nest egg for when I retire, etc., right? But right now, some of those individuals are paying anything from 3,000 to 5,000 per year in tax, and they make nothing off the property. So what I don't understand is that, you know, if we reconcile it in a way that it suits every individual participating, from the renter to the landlord to the government, and we create some sort of an equilibrium that has a level of fairness to it, I feel like, I just feel like we're not speaking about that. And it's the elephant in the room, and the government is profiting from it. And if we all saw that that money was going into services or infrastructure, etc., like,
yeah, mind you, what we do see though, Marie, and we know this for a fact, that a huge amount of money is going into social housing now. Like, there's no doubt about that, whether it's HAP or the, you know, homeless housing and all of that. There is an enormous, like, it's a money pit now, basically. It's a never-ending thing. So, and I think a lot of that's where if you're talking about the washing machine, that's where it's washing into, unfortunately. Look, I'll go back to Eileen. Just stay with me, please, Marie, because I want to ask Eileen, would you consider moving to, you know, if you could find accommodation with more affordable rent, Eileen, like moving far, far away?
I've looked at rents outside, but they're not substantially better. And I have to bear in mind my daughter's requirements as well. Like, she needs to be near transport and stuff like that. So there isn't a huge choice. And I have certainly looked outside Dublin. I'm not, you know, restricted to Dublin.
Yeah.
But there isn't a great choice. And as you know, in that recent Daft report, rents everywhere were going up. So it's not like you could, in the old days, you could say, I'll go to Donegal, I'd get it for half nothing. But it isn't like that anymore.
Oh no, and rents in those places went up massively, even more, even at a higher rate of inflation there than in Dublin and in the city apartments. I mean, the killer of this is, where is this going to end, is what you're wondering. I heard the minister saying that this is about, you know, this latest tweak to the market here with the no-fault evictions for big landlords, and then allowing landlords to reset rents between tenancies. That the aim, this is what he's saying, the aim is to drive rents lower because this is going to bring more investment in, there's going to be more supply, and the rents. And I cannot figure out how you can tell investors, on the one hand, we want you in here, we're going to let people reset rents and we let you reset rents. And on the other hand, said, ultimately, we want lower rents here. So I think that there is a really mixed up messaging in this.
Yeah.
Eileen, I mean, you're sounding almost, you know, like you have resigned yourself to your situation, Eileen. But what do you think, really? Like, when you're in the dark evenings, when you're at home thinking, where will this end for you?
Yeah, well, hopefully not under a bush, Katie. That's my worst fear. Oh. But, like, I have kind of accepted that I'll just have to pay, you know, as much as I can. I can't afford to be homeless, so I'll certainly try and pay. And that's why I'm trying to get more work in my current employment, to try and increase my income. But after that, I don't know, like, obviously when I get to 75, I'll have a different thing, assuming I've found anywhere before that, but I hope I will. Have to be positive or else.
Well, fair play to you, Eileen. I don't know, would I be as positive as you in that situation now?
Well, you know, if I give into it, like, I won't do anything, and that would be worse.
I really hope there's somebody out there that's listening to this that can help you. But I mean, the point is, you're not alone in this, and that's
no. In fact, I was doing a course, and there was a young woman there who had she has a family with her. She's been evicted, and she's on HAP, and trying to find anywhere is just so difficult. And I felt very sorry for her because it's just like, to try and find a 4-bed house is so difficult. So. It's just a mess. Let's face it, the whole housing setup is a mess.
Yeah.
And I don't see why the government can't build more housing, like through the, like this, through the cost rental. I mean, that is a good idea. It's still very expensive, but at least it's a little better than the new builds they're talking about.
Yeah, cost rental is obviously an answer for a lot of people. But as you say, there's just not anywhere near enough of those coming on stream now. Hang on, Eileen. I've got Morris on the other line. Morris, good afternoon.
Hello, Eileen. Hello, Katie. How are you both?
How are you, Morris?
Good, thanks.
Just listening to the conversation, I didn't get the entire background of the full conversation there, but it's pretty heartbreaking to listen to a situation where for whatever the reason, somebody is not really in control of their own destiny in this way. It's breaking my heart listening to this. I've always been very fortunate in that I've always owned my own home. And indeed, I used to work in financial planning, and it was always very important to try and give people the right advice in regard to the future financially. And I'm not sure of the background there, Eileen, but I hope you're going to be okay and this works out for you. But it's I believe we are statistically, proportionately, the fourth richest country in the world. We're a very wealthy country, and that means nothing to me when I hear that people simply can't, even with two good jobs, buy their own first little starter home. And also just listening to this story, although I didn't get the full background item. So that's kind of just what I wanted to say about this, you know.
But I mean, Eileen's, I mean, the fact that Eileen is at the reached the age she has at 70 and is still looking at working for many more years is like, I don't know. How, as you say, how did we end up here is the question you have to keep asking. Maurice, thanks for that. I want to bring in Cormac. Cormac, good afternoon.
Hi, good afternoon, Katie.
Yeah, you're not in this situation either, Cormac. You're a homeowner, but there's somebody in your home who's understands what's going on in the rental market right now.
Well, no, not quite. Yeah. I suppose I am a homeowner, one daughter. 24, so she hasn't moved out yet. She's only just finished college. But it's kind of just thinking about the future of her age group and older and getting stuck in the rental market because you can't afford to save to buy a house, which was always the natural progression of looking after yourself as you got older in Ireland. So that you wouldn't end up as your first caller there. Sorry, I forgot my name.
Eileen.
Eileen, yeah, which is the ridiculous situation, as you've said it yourself, that we're digging ourselves into this hole where we're going to have a huge number of people who, once they've retired, and your income takes a hit when you retire because you're on a lesser pension or a lesser income because of your pension, because it was always the expectation that you wouldn't be paying rent, or certainly not the astronomical rents that we're paying at the moment. So that's kind of the, you know, the timeline or the future, or maybe it's the present for Eileen and for others.
Yeah, you see, can I just say on this, because yeah, when we started going down this road of more and more people ending up in the as renters rather than homeowners, there was a kind of a lecture. People were being lectured and told, you know, what's wrong with Irish people? We're totally hung up on home ownership, and why aren't we more like the Europeans? And why can't, you know, get comfortable with the idea of renting for life rather than this complete obsession that Irish people have about owning their own home? But the reason that people were obsessed by that is because there was no safety net there at the end of this for when you got to the stage where you didn't have the kind of income you need to keep a roof over your head.
Yeah, exactly. But also the contrast that certainly hasn't been in the past is that rental prices and, as you said, the security of tenure would have been... the rent would have been much lower in most European countries to what it was in Ireland. Rent has escalated, but as has in a lot of other countries now as well, as property ownership has become a commodity as opposed to home ownership being a natural progression.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah. And again, I suppose the government will say that this new move that they're bringing in that they approved at Cabinet today is a move towards the more European system of, you know, greater protection for renters, more security of tenure and all of that. But it still doesn't get us anywhere near a situation where the likes of Eileen is going to be protected. Eileen, I can only wish you the very, very best of luck, Eileen.
Oh, thanks very much. And I'll keep my fingers crossed.
I mean, it's people like yourself are the backbone of the whole place, Eileen, and you're just trundling away there, and you don't deserve the situation you're in.
No. Well, look, thanks very much for having me on. Anyway, and if it helps other people, that would be good. I just hope I'm not enthralled with the new rental proposals they have. I don't see it really improving things. But anyway, hopefully the opposition will maybe help them shape it a bit more.
Eileen, stay in touch with us, won't you? And we'll keep track of how you're getting on, and hopefully get some find out some good news for you down the line.
Hopefully. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Eileen. Thanks, Cormac.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Now, I want to go to something completely different and say good afternoon to Fiona. Good afternoon, Fiona.
Hello, good afternoon, Katie. Nice to speak to you.
Lovely to speak to you, Fiona. I understand you have been on quite the quest.
Yes, I have.
So your the quest is about getting an Irish passport, but maybe take me back to what your connection is with Ireland in the first place.
Yes, absolutely. My mother was born in the Rotunda in Dublin in 1935 to Irish parents. And they moved over to London when she was about 12 years old after the war. And although obviously I had an Irish mother, I was quite surprised when I did a general DNA test to find out that my DNA was mostly Irish. And I was absolutely delighted. So I was in my mid-50s when I found this out, and I thought it would be a lovely idea as we're planning a trip around. I booked a trip around Ireland for my husband's 60th birthday, and I thought it'd be a lovely idea to get an Irish passport. And not so much about getting the passport, but what it actually means to me.
Yeah, because you had you came to Ireland a lot as a child, didn't you?
That's right, yes. Well, in my early teens, I came over for the first time for a wedding, and I just had the best time with my cousins, and I travelled over a few more times as a teen, and then through my life, I have been backwards and forwards since then too, and I love it, absolutely love it. But I live in England, in the southwest now, and going back 2 years ago in 2023, it was wonderful. But when I found out about the DNA results, I did a lot more digging into our family heritage and past, and was able to go back to the 1820s. I discovered that my great-grandparents and my great-great-grandparents were buried in Glasnevin Cemetery, so we were able to go and visit my grandmother's home that she lived in 1920s. Yeah, I just felt really connected. My grandparents were married in St. Columba's Church on Iona Road in Dublin, and I was actually named Fiona after the road in Dublin. So they were just sort of, it was just really lovely just to reconnect slightly.
Yeah, and you found out something really interesting about your grandfather as well.
Yes, that's right. My granddad, as a baby, he was a year old and travelled with his mother, who was sadly widowed, at a year old, they travelled to New York. And I've got details of them travelling on the Adriatic in 1915. And they had a passage booked on the Lusitania. And thankfully, they missed it because in May 1915, it was torpedoed.
Of course. So they missed the boat, but in a very positive way.
Absolutely. And my grandfather was an absolute stickler for timekeeping, which is kind of ironic, but he wouldn't have had any say so as he was only a year old. So
So you might never have been here at all if they had made that deadline.
Absolutely.
Okay, so bring us up to date then. You decided to pursue this idea to get yourself an Irish passport. So you needed to you needed to establish that your mother was Irish, was born here.
Yes, so I started trying to look for her birth certificate down the usual routes. just kept coming up against the brick walls. So I then contacted the Department of Social Protection, and they sent back an entry form, which had details of my mother's birth, my grandparents, where she was born, but there was no forename, there was just a dash. So all the details were there, but the forename was missing, and that's been the problem. So I was then told to contact...
Stop, I'll stop you there, Fiona. So was this a birth cert?
Yes.
So your mother, your mother's birth cert that was supplied to you by the department here doesn't have her name on it?
No.
And the box where your name is normally, it was just...
Has a dash.
A dash. That is extraordinary.
Well, that's what I was really surprised and just had no idea how difficult it was going to be then to prove that my mother was even born in Ireland. So.
Oh, okay. So, so you this year, what year was her? She was born in what year?
In 1935.
Okay, so you know that, and she was born in the Rotunda Hospital.
Yes.
And what was her? What was her name?
Her name was Margaret Mary McDermott.
Margaret Mary McDermott, born 1935. What is the actual full date of birth, Fiona?
It's the 17th of December, 1935. And I have her parents' marriage certificate. They were born on the they were married on the 28th of February at St. Columba's Church. So she came along quite quickly, but she came along over nine and a half months after the marriage.
Okay, so so no scandal. So,
no scandal. I thought that maybe that might have been the case, but no, they were. I've got complete all the legal documentation from my family, going back years, marriage certificate and birth certificates, but just that missing forename. So there's nothing to link me to my mother, and my mother's certificate is sort of hanging somewhere, just in. Just incomplete.
And I know you've pursued this further. So first of all, you need this birth cert. You have to be able to prove that your mother was born here in Ireland,
yeah,
in order to proceed with this application for the passport. And what have they said to you when you went back and said, look, where can I go with this?
So what they told me to do was to contact the GRO. And I was then sent a Section 65 form because of this incomplete entry.
The GRO, that's the Office of the Registrar General, is it?
That's right, yeah. Yes.
Okay, go on.
And they said that I would need a baptismal certificate to complete the form, to complete the entry for the birth certificate. And that's where the issue lay, that... all of the baptismal records at that time are manual and kept within the different parish churches. So I started to contact all the churches around Dublin where I knew that we had any kind of family contacts or any kind of connections. And I just kept coming back with nothing. I contacted I put in a Freedom of Information request to the Rotunda, and got a very full and comprehensive letter back from them. But again, absolutely nothing at all. And this went on for many months. There was a really lovely lady at the Archdiocese of Dublin who was giving me emails and contact details of people to contact to try to find a baptismal certificate. Yeah, it just came back with nothing at all. I just wondered if anybody knew, if anybody else had experienced something like this. My grandmother died in 1980. My grandfather died in 1990. And I lost my mum about 20 years ago. So there isn't anybody
that you can ask,
that I can ask, or that could go to a meeting or anything. There's I've got absolutely no proof at all.
It is. I honestly have never heard of a case where a birth cert had a dash instead of a name on it. That's just. And I wonder, yeah, if any of our listeners out there, 51551, have come across this or have any idea of why a birth cert would be done in that way. And I would even surprise that it's legal, because I thought you would have to have a name on a birth cert. And the baptismal cert. Now, I know our listeners are very good at tracking all of this, these kind of things down. So if anyone out there has any ideas on that, is there a possibility your mother wasn't baptised? That would be very unlikely, I would have thought, for the 1930s.
I think it would be extremely unlikely. My grandfather and grandmother were very, very devout Roman Catholics. And I just don't think that there would be a chance that she wasn't baptised.
Could she have been one of those emergency baptisms? You know, maybe had a health issue as a baby, maybe not baptised in a church.
Well, that was something that I understand. Is it St Mary's Pro Cathedral in Dublin? I understand that that's where babies were taken, where they didn't think that there was a chance that they were going to survive. And I've checked with St Mary's Pro Hospital. Mary's Pro Cathedral there as well too, and yeah, nothing.
So you have actually gone down all the routes. And just to be clear again, your mom's surname was on that birth cert, but not her.
Yes.
Not the Mary. It's Mary Margaret, is it?
Margaret Mary.
Margaret Mary. So the Margaret Mary wasn't. Was just a dash. Was. It really is quite the mystery, isn't it?
It is. It just became a bit of a mission, and it really isn't about. It really isn't about getting the passport. It's just more about my heritage and what it stands for, really.
Yeah.
And I just think it's just sad, because she was a very proud Irish woman, and I just think it's sad that that there's just no record of her.
And growing up, did you grow up Irish, if I can put it that way, Fiona? Like, was there, you know, were you involved in Irish dancing or the kind of Irish community there, or were you a bit separate from all of that?
I'll be honest, I was slightly separate from that, although my mum was very religious and played a really big part in the local community with the church. So in that way, yes, I was. But unfortunately, no, I didn't do any dancing or learn Gaelic or I think when I went to Dublin first as a teen, that's when I just really fell in love with the country and the people. It wasn't so much part of my life when I was a child growing up.
But as a teenager, you sort of realised that heritage was stronger. Yeah.
I loved it. Yes, absolutely. And then I've been able to travel over there a few times as an adult, and particularly loved our last trip for my husband's birthday. We just travelled to places that I hadn't actually been to before, to Galway and Cork and Killarney, and we just had a really fabulous holiday.
I'm just going to go over what you have been able to dig out, just again, just if this, because I know our listeners are really, really good at hunting down and coming up with ideas of where you might find, pointers of where you should go with this. So you have your mother's marriage cert. So that was Margaret Mary McDermott, married Anthony John Bone in Westminster Roman Catholic Cathedral in 1958.
Yeah.
You know that you're... what about your... Could you not get it through your father?
No, sadly, he has no, he's in his 90s and he has no record at all of any sort of paper records for my mother. I know, which is really strange, is I know that my mother had an Irish passport because she travelled to Rome in in 1980, she travelled to Rome with the church. And I do vaguely remember her having difficulty and having to go to the Irish Embassy in London. And now I can see why.
Oh,
So, but I tried to see if I could get a copy of, if my dad had a copy of her passport, but he didn't have anything. He had absolutely no paperwork at all.
So that was another blank. So your mother's, So you have the marriage cert, you have your mother's death cert, that was registered in 2004. You have your own birth cert and your own marriage cert, but you have to you still have to have, for the grandmother rule or the mother rule, you still don't have evidence that birth cert you have isn't recognised as evidence that your mother was born here.
No. And I sadly also therefore have no link proving that I am my grandparents' granddaughter either, because the link sort of stops with my mum. So although I have my grandparents' birth certificates and marriage certificates, I have no proof linking my mum to me. So that's a sort of a bit of a sad link in the chain as well.
It is. I can imagine these things become important once you realise they're not there, don't they?
Yes, absolutely. However, it sort of pales into insignificance when I think of, I was listening to Eileen's story earlier. But that broke my heart. But this is just something, it was a quest that I was on, and I battled and battled. And I think once you start trying to look into something like this, it just sort of spurs you on. And I just got to the point where I just wasn't getting anywhere until I met this absolutely charming Irishman on Saturday evening. And he suggested, we just got chatting about all sorts, and he suggested I contact Liveline. And
which is excellent advice. Excellent advice, Fiona.
Yeah.
And we're glad you did. And look, we put it out there now, and you would never know. Maybe one of our listeners will have some ideas for you, and we will get back to you if they do. But
that would be wonderful.
Yeah,
thank you.
Thank you, Fiona. We'll take a break.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Now, from the sublime to the, I'm not entirely sure what this is, but apparently we are living through Thai Guy Summer. This is so-called because short shorts are back with a bang. Anne-Marie Gannon, good afternoon.
How are you, Katie? How are you doing?
Great to talk to you, Anne-Marie. And great to get some expert advice on this, because it's a very serious matter, obviously. What's the story with the short shorts?
Well, the short shorts, just to say that normal men's shorts, the way we would see shorts, would have a six-inch inseam, right?
Right.
That's the length that goes from, say, the crotch to the inside of your leg. But there is a big fashion trend at the moment, and they can go as high as 3 inches. So they're knocking off 3 inches, say, off the leg length.
Now,
they're becoming short shorts.
I'm just trying to picture it, Anne-Marie. And I have to say, 3-inch inseam seems very, very short.
Well, it's very, very short. But you know what it is? I think it's more about confidence. Okay, I'm going to bring it back to the 70s, right? They're calling this the Speedo summer because of the short shorts.
And Speedos are back as well, apparently.
Well, yes, but you have to remember, in 1972, probably way before your time now, Katie, but Mark Spitz in those Speedo shorts were such, everybody was talking about them. That was a very hot summer that year. And now it looks like fashion has turned full circle, and it's coming back now for gentlemen or boys or whatever you want to call them. Okay. To allow them to embrace their confidence and their pecs and all of that, and to shorten their shorts.
Okay, Anne-Marie, you're going to have to explain who Mark Spitz is for our younger listeners.
Mark Spitz was an American Olympic winner, and he was, he'd be kind of, remember Farrah Fawcett was the face of the 70s. Well, Mark Spitz was the male of the 70s in those, but there was a picture of him just only in tight Speedo swimming trunks, and where the shorts had gone, and these looked like underwear, more or less. And he became an icon, a swimming icon in the 70s in the Speedos. And that's how Speedos really hit the market. But they've come back now with a bang, because you see different, the catwalks have had them. You've had Harry Styles in them, Pharrell Williams, Hugh Jackman. If you remember the film Pulp Fiction, John Travolta wore them in Pulp Fiction. But now, with the summer of 2025, it's arrived. I think there's a lot of gender blending going on, where men feel good about their bodies the way women feel good about their bodies, and they want to show them off, and this is an opportunity for them to do that. Now, I'm not saying you're going to see them on Dollymount Beach or Bannerstrand or anything like that, but if you go away abroad, I guarantee you'll see them. And we see them being worn on the likes of Love Island, you know.
I was wondering, you know, because we're blaming Paul Mescal with his O'Neill shorts, he was being blamed for this trend a couple of years ago. But the Love Island influence must be massive in this.
Ah, yes, but hold on, for the GAA now, you have to blame Paul Mescal. He opened up the treasure chest there now with the shorts. And he did a great job.
Now, careful, Anne-Marie.
Well, it's a hot day now, Katie. It's a hot day. But I do actually think, and it's not, men of all ages are embracing it. It's not just young boys, but hopefully, you know, people will be sensible enough and realise you can have confidence, but you can be overly confident too, which doesn't always do you favour.
Can everybody carry off the micro shorts is the big next question.
Well, you know, they each do their own, but my vision, no. They wouldn't be able to carry them off. But you know, as I say, each their own. Fashion has its own kind of, you embrace it whatever way you want, but you just don't get arrested for doing it.
Would you be needing to reach for the fake tan if you were going to go down this road?
I think it would be more than fake tan. You'd want to be in the gym 7 hours a day and, you know, getting tight and, as they say, snatched. You'd want to be snatched before you kind of display yourself in them. But I think it's more the younger generation, the appeal of it. And there's so many sports celebrities embracing it. As I said there, you know, like we're looking at the GAA pitches and that. The lads, we had the debate about the skorts and the shorts for the ladies. And now it's shorter shorts for the gents.
Will you hang on there? Because I've got Edward Hayden on the other line. Edward.
Hi, Katie. Good afternoon to you.
Would you describe yourself as snatched, Edward?
Well, I don't know. There was a strong fitting definition there for what snatched is, so I don't think I tick all of the boxes, so perhaps not. In the effort of modesty and humility, I'll say no.
But where do you stand on the short shorts?
Come here, I tell you, I was thinking about this in advance of our conversation, and I suppose what it all boils down to, when you really look at every single factor, isn't it all about personal expression? And I think fashion is certainly that. So I could have something on today that I look fabulous in. I'm on my way home from work. I think I might look great today. Someone else mightn't at all. And I think that's what it is. It's really just a symbol of your own style, your own personal expression, and what it is that you think you look good in. So again, in terms of the micro shorts, you know, I know you might have, whether they're micro in length or micro in snugness, I think it's two different things, isn't it, really? Yes. You know, I mean, sometimes you can look borderline provocative. But I think in terms of the length, you know, they're very much prioritising comfort and practicality. A lot of people using it for sportswear, but also a lot of people using it to kind of to look good. I mean, if you're kind of maybe not 6'3", it will help you perhaps to elongate your leg, which will make you look perhaps more slender and taller as well. So I think there's a lot of reasons. You know, if you look at the Bermuda shorts that were out a long while ago, or the cargo versions that are underneath your knees, they can drag you down as well. So, I mean, I think it's no one's life is going to stand up or fall down by either wearing them or looking at someone else wearing them. Sure, there's not.
Oh, but like when you see 3-inch inseams, like that's short.
That is short. And I suppose, you know, it really then depends on your own. I mean, the way it is, Katie, for me, I think if they're covering, you know, your kind of your body parts front and back, you know, that will be fine once you're happy and confident. But I mean,
well,
no three, more than you want to face.
3 inches now will not leave much to the imagination, Edward. We just put it that way.
No, but I suppose you'd have underwear with them as well. So that will kind of, you know, protect and structure as well, won't it?
Would you wear them yourself, Edward?
Well, it would all depend. I probably wouldn't wear 3 inches now. I'd be maybe more along. I'll go the Paul Mescal-esque look, who did revolutionise the whole short short. So I don't think I personally would go 3 inches, but I don't think I'd be overly offended or my day would be ruined if I saw someone else in them. But I personally wouldn't. But yet, if I was maybe going out for a run, or if I was doing, I'm doing a bit of reimagining my fitness regime at the minute, and I probably would wear it for that, because, you know, the less fit you are, the more huffing and puffing and panting you're doing, and the kind of the warmer and the sweater you're getting. So, you know, I'd happily wear the short version. Maybe not 3 inches. I must measure them when I put them on later on, Katie. But I don't think they're 3. I'd say they're definitely not 3.
Yeah, because I think, Anne-Marie, I saw somewhere that Marks and Spencers are selling, and they're going well, shorts with the 3-inch inseam.
Yes. Just to say, though, Katie, a good pair of shorts with the 3-inch inseam has an inbuilt support for the family jewels.
Oh, right. good to know, Anne-Marie.
Just so you know. Yes, no, they are. Marks and Spencer are doing a huge campaign around it, but they're very popular. I think it's just one of those fads, though, as well. I don't know if it's going to last, but it's like that to do with men's fashion. I mean, 20 years ago, we wouldn't have seen a man in a pink flower shirt. Today, we see a man in a pink flower shirt. You don't blink an eye. Each to his own.
This is very true. I believe you are. The Miss Ireland competition is coming up this weekend.
This weekend, yes, it's on in Meath, and it is in Knightsbrook and Meath, the Miss Ireland. And yes, you're right. Go on, say, Katie, say it. 40 years ago,
I wasn't going to out you with the 40-year word, but you're looking incredibly well on it, Anne-Marie, let me just say.
You're so kind, Katie. Thank you very much.
I can't believe it's 40 years since you were Miss Ireland. Yeah?
Yeah, there's an awful lot of changes in those 40 years, especially for women, but that's another story.
Well, we've gone through 3 cycles of micro shorts since then, I'd say.
Absolutely. An inch per decade.
Anne-Marie, thanks, Emil. Enjoyed
Katie,
that chat.
Thank you so much.
Edward,
you too.
Edward, good luck.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Now, reading my Independent this morning, I see that 1 in 4 weddings and 1 in 4 couples are now spending over €50,000 on their weddings, which is absolutely staggering. And a lot of people, we're told, going into debt to pay for these weddings. Sinead, good afternoon.
Hi, Katie. How are you?
What do you think of that? 50 grand for a wedding, Sinead?
I mean, it's scary, isn't it? Like, it's a lot of money. If you have the money, great, but most people don't, do they?
Tell me about your own wedding.
So I didn't spend 50,000 on my wedding. So I think we got married abroad, and the major reason we decided to get married abroad was to save money. I mean, we didn't want to be mean, but make it, you know, it's a lot of money. So we got married abroad to save the bobs, and we wanted to start married life off debt-free, basically.
And was that the reason you went abroad? You know, because a lot of people now go abroad because it's very Instagrammable and all that. So
yeah. Oh, no. Like, we just went away, just the two of us. So it wasn't like we put an entourage. We didn't want to send any pictures up or anything. To get married and just spend the money on ourselves, really. That's what we done.
So how much did you spend on the whole nuptials then?
The whole thing, everything in. And this was a 2-week honeymoon as well, and we really lapped it up and ate out and had a lovely time. It was €5,000, which is still quite a lot of money, but it's nothing compared to 50,000.
Oh no, it's not. It's a long way off that. And you would you recommend? I mean, was there any pangs there if you thought that I would have loved to have my big day?
Yeah, a little bit. The morning of my wedding, my two brothers rang me, and they just said that they would love to have been there with me. And I said, oh, look, I was a bit sad about it, but my husband, about my soon-to-be husband, said, look, this is what we want. I said, you know, you're right. Let's do it. So, and I don't regret it now at all.
Yeah, I do still resent friends who did do that, though, that they did us out of a day.
I have friends that got married around the same time as us and after us, and they then said, do you know what? You were dead right to do that. Now, I do have, and I do sound a bit like I love myself, but I have a photo album, 300 photographs of me and my husband in all the spots around Rome, and we look beautiful. And so,
if you do say so yourself,
we might have had those lovely, you know, sunny photos.
And did you do anything traditional, like the whole, you know, something borrowed, something blue?
Yeah,
I
mean, yeah, so we got, yeah, we did, yeah. So I borrowed, I wore my granny's wedding dress. I got it cycled slightly, but not much to it. I think it was a cool 60s wedding dress. It was just, and it just fitted me perfectly, and I just got just a small few touches done to it. And we got married in the church, and... yeah, it was just, and I borrowed her pearls as well, my granny's pearls, because I didn't have fancy pearls. So we borrowed just a few little bits.
And you got to meet the Pope.
Yeah, we did. Pope Francis, the guy, the Pope that just recently died. And he was buried on our wedding anniversary, which is, so the day he was buried recently, you know, I said to myself, God, we met him this day 8 years ago. It's so bizarre. And, you know, but yeah, we met him the day after, and it was lovely. We met him in person. It was just so nice to meet him.
So basically, your message is don't spend it.
And look, I mean, Irish weddings are great crack. Okay, I love an Irish wedding, but they really are all the same. Like, and I know some couples think, oh, I'll put in something extra there. No one will have thought of this, but they really are all the same. And I just think, what's the point of starting off married life in debt? I mean, look, we had a mortgage, and so that obviously is a debt. But I couldn't have been adding 35,000 to it and paying back the credit union every week just for this one day. And, you know, like, I had the most spectacular day, and I don't regret, you know, doing it the way I done it. And it was just magical, you know. And I could, if I could do it in the morning, I would, but my husband said, once was enough, he keeps saying.
I do. You'll get to renew the vows at some stage for sure.
Yeah, that's what, I might go back to Rome and do it again and bring the two children with us as well.
I have to say, it does sound pretty cool, Sinead. Hang on a second. I've got Geraldine. Geraldine, what was wedding planning like back when you got married?
Oh, well, it was a lot different. Mind you, listen to that girl now. That was beautiful, I have to say. All the touches from, you know, family things from the past. It sounds really lovely. I was just thinking there, like, well, look, mine, I got married 1979. So we got married within, you know, now I can't believe this planned. So a couple of years ahead, 6 weeks, that was it. We decided before Christmas and we were married on the 26th of January. 6 weeks, that was it. And it's funny, my son got married on St. Bridget's Day. He was the first to get married. And it's funny, like, because a lot of memories came back from our own wedding. You know what I mean? We were talking about, obviously, when we got married and all that. And it was a bit unusual, really, ours at the time, because we had a really small wedding. My mother had only died a couple of years before. But anyway, we had a very small. We decided it was going to be small. But then we got married on a Friday. And the following, we went to Dublin. I live in Navan. Anyway, we went to Dublin to Barry's on our honeymoon. And on the following Wednesday, we just said, oh, do you know what? We'll invite people to a party, as we thought. But actually, we had a reception on the following Wednesday night. Oh, and so we invited all our friends.
So did you have a wedding breakfast, as they used to say?
I had that on the day, but it was only very small. No band, no anything. Just immediate kind of people we needed. That, like, my father would say, and my husband's father and mother, and really just very close. My sister done bridesmaid, and my husband's brother done best man. So it was very small. But then, as I said, we went away for a couple of days to Dublin, and on the following Wednesday, I don't know how it happened, we just decided, you know what, we'll invite everyone, we'll have a party. But it ended up the reception. We had dinner and everything the day of the wedding. No band or anything, just drinks and in a small little hotel. And it was lovely. And it was winter. You know, it was really cold, I remember. That year was a really cold year, and snow and that around. You know, even though it wasn't that day.
The party that became your reception, that was just a kind of last minute.
It was just kind of like, oh, sure, look, you know, maybe it was, there was that bit of guilt there as well. You say, oh, she will invite then. She will have a kind of, invite everyone to. And it was funny, like, when you think of them, you wouldn't have anything on a Wednesday night. It was on a Wednesday evening. you know, like at the beginning, you might have said beginning of February, but everyone turned up. So it was different times. And I had my cake and everything at it.
Did you have a big cake or did you go down that road?
I did have a cake. Well, it wasn't huge, but I remember it was a decent enough cake. And a friend of mine, actually, is a great photographer, that particular thing, you know, I had an outfit on me and all, you know. I had my wedding dress that day, obviously the day I got married, which was very simple. It was made, was handmade, actually, by a local lady. Very simple dress. And what do you call it? Like a friend of mine took photographs at the, I call it the reception now, basically.
Yeah.
But it was just totally 6 weeks. That was it.
How much did it cost?
It cost, I was just saying that your reception is there. We were trying to think back. I was saying euros. But it cost £1,000.
For the whole thing?
The whole thing. And I remember even after it, you know, my husband was self-employed anyway. And you know, money be tight, we said. You know, we were after paying for it like 6 weeks. I remember we were waiting, and when we came home, we were waiting on my wages to come in.
Yeah.
Because it was January, the end of January. And anyway, he'd do a lot of work, summer work, basically. And we were waiting on my wages to come in. And even, you know, isn't it funny when we're talking about houses and all that sort of thing? You know, how has changed so much. I didn't even think where we were going to live. We just moved in, like my mother had gone and my father was in the house, and we literally just moved into the, my husband came in and moved into the house for a year, and then we moved on after that.
I love your attitude, Geraldine. Just roll along.
Oh, yeah.
Everything will work out fine. We'll have the party. We'll have the house.
Yeah.
Will you hang on? I want to bring Liz in because she has memories as well, going back a little while. Liz, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Like, you did have a reception, Liz.
I did, yes. I had a reception in Nina.
How long ago is this now?
It will be 60 years next Monday week.
Right. And in your case, a lot of planning went into the wedding cake.
Oh, yes, it did, yes. I had the wedding cake made out in a convent out in Killiney called the Cenacle. And I was afraid they wouldn't have it ready in time. So I told them we were getting married a month earlier. So
Liz, you lied to the nuns.
By the time we had, it wasn't the first time, by the time we had the cake eaten, we had no teeth left. They were all broken from the icing on the cake.
Oh, because the icing was rock hard, having been left there for a month.
Hard. Yeah, more than a month. But anyway, we had 23 people at our wedding.
23 people.
And that included my husband and I and the priest.
So 20 people as guests.
20 people, yeah.
And what do you think then when you hear about these 50 grand weddings now?
Oh, I think it's crazy. Like this other lady said, my husband was also going to be self-employed. So money was not very sure-shook at the time. And I worked in the civil service, so there was not much money. But what there was, we made good use of it. And
Did you have to give up your job, Liz?
Oh, I did, yes. But I was delighted. I often say I got married. I left the civil. I got married to leave the civil service. I couldn't cope with it at all. Now, I had good friends there, and everybody was lovely and everything. But no.
But
yes, I had to give up my job. It changed in 1970, but this was 1965.
Can you remember how much your wedding cost?
I was thinking about it since, and I'd say roughly between the honeymoon, we went on our honeymoon to Edinburgh, I'd say altogether about £500 altogether. And I remember we had savings in the post office, the GPO. And at that time, you couldn't get it out. You had to give 10 days notice. So we couldn't get some money out. And I asked my father, who always had very, very little money. My mother was Chancellor of the Exchequer in our house. So my father couldn't or wouldn't or hadn't the money to give me to go on our honeymoon. So we asked my father-in-law, and he loaned us some money, maybe about £20. I don't know what it was. but we paid him back, I think.
Do you still have any of your wedding presents?
Oh, I do, yes. And that's another thing. I think nowadays I have wedding presents, coffee cups, and Aunt of Oliver's gave us lovely goldy coffee cups and saucers, and people gave us marmalade containers or containers for marmalade. I have all those and I appreciate them. But unfortunately, nobody wants anything anymore. Everybody has enough.
Well, they want cash, Liz, because those 50 grand weddings don't pay for themselves.
Well, they don't, but I won't pay for them either. So I don't agree with giving. I give something that I might be remembered. Somebody might look at it in 10 years' time and say, oh, Liz and Oliver gave us that. If I give them cash, that could be gone down the swanny. So I don't do that.
Fair play to you, Liz. You're holding out. I'm told I have to take my last break. One, just very quickly, Geraldine, have you anything that you still remember from?
Actually, absolutely. I've got presents. And I'm actually, because as I said, he got married, he said to me, Mum, will you write all that stuff down? I said, our dinner service, we got off David's mother. That comes out every Christmas. And it's still being used around, you know, special occasions. Yeah. She gave us that as a present. Another just thing I want to mention, it was so important to me. Everyone is different, but it was so important to me that my son, he did get married, and his wife, they got married in church. Now, he said to me one day at the table, it was kind of in between now, but it was very, very important to me. And I think that's another massive big change. Where he said to me at the table one day, just add this in. I just want to add this. It's very important to me. He said to me at the table one day, Mom and Dad, is there anything you want in particular at the wedding? I just thought for a minute. And at that stage, they made up their mind to get married in the church. And in the church, and I said, no, you've given me everything I want. You're getting married in the church. And that was really important to me.
Geraldine, thank you for that. Lovely to talk to you. Lovely to talk to you, Liz, with those memories. We will take our last break there.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And we were talking to Fiona earlier there, who was trying to find out more information about her mother's birth cert, where there was a dash instead of her name on that cert. Elena, good afternoon.
Hi, Katie. How are you?
Elena, I'm nearly out of time, but since Fiona's been on, you've been digging and you found a little bit more info for us.
I have found a little bit more info. I found info about where her grandparents got married and where her family might have lived. She might be barking up the wrong tree in terms of which church she's looking for baptismal records, but I've since found another little bit of information for her that I'd prefer to speak to her off air about. If she wants, you can give her the number for Founders International in Dublin, and we'll speak to her off air, because I have a little bit more information for her.
Okay, that's great, and we'll hopefully find
unusual.
Out.
It's not unusual for a person not to have a name or to be called female or male or dash or unknown and then the surname. So that's not an unusual
That's
thing.
Not an, even back in 1935 that was there. Well, because people would not have that. People wouldn't have the name decided at that stage. Is that it?
Well, in this case it might be slightly different.
Okay, Elena, we'll pass on the details from Fiona. Fiona, I'm sure you're intrigued to hear that.
Hello, Katie. Yes, really intrigued. Thank you so much, Elena. And I look forward to finding out a bit more information.
Okay. The mystery continues. We'll find out more. Tune in tomorrow, folks. But that's all we have time for today. Dave Gibson was on sound. The broadcast coordinator was Stephen Higgins, and Owen McLaughlin produced. Annette Egan is a series producer. Stay tuned now for Radar. See you up next.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Bring a little sunshine indoors with the exciting new arrivals in store or online at harrycurry.com.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815 or send your WhatsApp voice notes to 087 484 8888.